You're now listening to Sound Talent Media. Check out more shows at soundtalentmedia.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Just heard the intro music. You heard the guitar. You heard the bass kicking beats. And we're back for another episode of the X-Man podcast. I'm your host, Doc Coyle. This is the third time I've started this intro. My dog keeps barking at nothing. You know, for those pet owners out there, if you have a podcast and you're trying to go and they know when you're going to record. I don't know. They have it. Burrowed inside their DNA. Anyway, welcome back to another episode. I don't have anything like crazy mapped out to talk about in my intro. I guess I wanted to, you know, just be forthright and talk about that. You know, I've been dealing with some depression the last couple weeks, a little bit of anxiety, but mainly depression. And, the way it manifests itself for me is I want to just do nothing. When I say nothing, you know, just veg out. You know, I want to watch movies and eat junk food. And it's, you know, I think these things manifest in different kinds of ways where sometimes an event or a difficult time will spur on the feeling. And for me, it's almost been the exact opposite where I can't point to anything and go, hey, this thing isn't working in my life, or I'm disappointed with this, or I'm angry at this. It's really quite the opposite. It like, I actually had a nice lump sum, some payment. And I was like, I'm rich. I'm going out partying this week. And I think I partied a little too hard. And maybe the hangovers have depressed me. Maybe I think that's what might have spurred it on. But no, I think I go through these like push and pull times of being really pumped up and motivated. I'm working, and then I get burnt out, and then okay, I'll chill out for a little bit, and then I chill a little too hard. And then so it's this weird thing. Like, I don't know if being busy is good for my mood and state of mind, or Like being busy makes me in a good state of mind, or is it you do things and then that makes you in a good, like, you know, it's chicken and the egg. Like, are you in a good mood so then you are very productive, or does being productive put you in a good mood? I'm sure it's a little bit of both. But in these moments, and I've talked about this before, but I always feel like it's important to mention it in the moment, because you know, I just think we need to normalize talking about how we feel, especially men, where there's definitely a put on a good face. I watched this really interesting Vice video from a few months back, and it was about a young kid, a black Republican kid. His YouTube name was like the Black Redneck and stuff. And he talked about how he's supposed to be, you know, he's a young guy, but you know, in the culture we live in, you know, people listen to all kinds of people. And he's like, well, you can't act like you're asking questions when I'm going on a rant or giving my opinion. You have to say it in a very affirmative action, because people know you're strong and it's like, and I guess to maybe that audience, that's how that works. And I guess to some degree, maybe if I was a vlogger, or, you know, I give my opinions in these intros and these monologues, but it's always from the perspective of, hey, this is in my very humble opinion. But, you know, I never want to just present strong or present perfect, because I think that's fucking bullshit. I don't know. Again, I've mentioned this, but it bears repeating. I want to take steps to create a space of as much authenticity as possible, which isn't always easy. And I want to emphasize as possible, because what is authenticity, right? I mean, how it's still a performance, right? You know, my performance might be I'm pretending to be authentic guy. You know, if you want to get kind of in the weeds on it. And so I always, if I'm feeling some kind of way, I always want to talk about it on the show. And I'm feeling way better today and like the last previous days. It's more about the days leading up to it. Can you hear the dog barking? Can you hear this? Jabroni. All right, I'm back. I left for a second, had to go deal with the pup. I love my dog. I love my dog to death, but sometimes she's a jabroni. And you gotta let her know, listen, you're acting like a jabroni. Do you know what that means? And they look at you, they don't know what it means. And they're like, well, whatever jabroni is, that's what you are. Or that's the way you're acting. All right, get it together. So I put her in her pen for a little bit, let her collect herself. Anyway, yeah, I like to talk about these things, and it's not about leaning into it, you know, because I think whatever depressed mood we might be in, because I think there's levels to it, because there's like depression where you're like, it's bad, and I don't want to say I was in that boat, but it's just that, you know, it's just that dark cloud hovering over you, and for me, it's a wanting to just get away from everything, you know, just sick of stuff. I'm sick of responsibility. maybe it's all tied to that, being responsible for stuff, and I don't know. And I feel like then I'm delinquent in certain things, and I let things that are important, life things, procrastinate, and then I get disappointed in myself. But I'll always try. Always never try to beat myself up too much over these things too, but sometimes if you're disappointing someone you care about, then you gotta check yourself. So anyway, yeah, I didn't really have a whole lot to say on that subject, except you know, we're all going through things, but you know, I can feel myself on the way out, even though I ate a bunch of junk food today, but that's all right. Some days you don't have those days. It's gonna happen. I went to Chick-fil-A, all right, the line was short. I was like, all right, I'm going to do this. It's been a minute since I've been to Chick-fil-A, even though they got anti-gay policies. You know, the chicken just speaks my language. You know, I don't vote with my dollar. You know, I don't care if the chicken's good. I'm going. I can't. I'm sorry. I'm sorry, my people. Chicken over politics. I can't help it. I really can't help it. All right. We do have a sponsor this week. Lovely, lovely sponsor. A band from Dallas, Texas. Lovely Dallas, Texas. Land of freedom and barbecue. All right. They know about the chicken down there. And this band is called Light the Fire. And the song is entitled Barriers. I'm sorry. So that was Barriers by Light the Fire from Dallas, Texas. That sounded pretty damn good. And I went and checked out the band's Spotify, and they're a real deal band. I mean, they've been around for around 10 years. They put out two EPs on their own, but signed to Standby Records in 2015 and released three albums and did a bunch of touring. And apparently they're out of their record deal, and Barriers is the first single they released since then. They're going to be dropping another single soon, as well as a 5-song EP. So record labels, you got a band out there that's sounding pretty damn good. You might want to swoop in on this. And I looked at the streams for the last album. They have stuff in like the 100,000s, and song had over 1 million streams. So might be a good band to pick up. Get them while you can. And the theme of that track is about embracing the differences among people and eliminating the barriers that divide us. I think that's beautiful. If you want to check the band out, their Instagram is at lightthefire_TX. Twitter, lightthefire_TX. And their merch store is just a regular old school website, www.lightthefire.com. Thank you so much to them for sponsoring the show. It is always appreciated. Keeping the lights on over at the X-Man Mansion, we really appreciate it here. If you'd like to sponsor the show, drop in the DMs, or you can email me at thexmanpodcast@gmail.com. Remember, that's EX. Good Lord. I think I'm losing it a little bit over here. It's all right. We're going to be all right. And the sponsorships are going well. We're kind of backed up. Like I said, it'll probably take a few weeks to get on, but it's well worth it because people keep hitting me up. And I got a lot of people come back for multiples, which lets you know X-Men fans move the needle. I love it. Well, let's get to our guest. We have a lovely, lovely guest this week. His name is Chad Johnson. He used to be an A&R person at Tooth & Nail Records, Christian record label, and he is one of the founders of Furnace Fest. There we go. No notes, guys, doing this off the dome. I should know that. Yes, Furnace Fest, which is a festival. I talk about this in the conversation. God forbid, played literally 20 years ago, and it's a real benchmark festival. They had to cancel, or they postponed the new one due to the pandemic. And Chad is just a really thoughtful individual, and you know, I'd say someone who is really embedded in this culture, and someone helping move this forward. And I'm really like getting people on the show that are more on the industry side and not just musicians. And I thought this was actually a really, really great conversation and really insightful. So I think you guys are really going to enjoy this. So check out my conversation with the awesome Chad Johnson. Hey, Chad.
Hey, Doc. How you doing?
I'm doing all right. Thank you so much.
Good to see you, man.
Well, you know, we're here now.
Yeah, we are. Yeah, and what a better, you know, time than the present to be talking Furnace Fest.
Yeah. So crazy. I think it's interesting because, right, we have this kind of 20-year thing.
Yeah.
And whether it's Furnace Fest or any number of band reunions, you know, there's
right,
you know, a lot of interest all of a sudden, even in my old band, God forbid, like people are reaching out, and like we just put out this vinyl, a reissue, and just in social media spaces, and it seemed to happen really fast, right?
Yeah.
Like it seemed like, you know, God forbid broke up like 8 years ago. Wow. To some fanfare, but it wasn't like, you know, I was there doing the shows. It wasn't like people were clamoring for the band. And now, not only with that scenario, but you know, Shadows Fall just announced a reunion show. What do you think? Are we just in that normal kind of nostalgia phase, you think, or is it just time?
It's both. I mean, yeah, I think you're right. I think it's two, to me anyway, it's two factors. One is that the nostalgia one that you just beautifully pointed out, you know, I think it's called age or aging, you know, like it's like I'm 47 now, you know? And like, so there's a part of me that feels a level of sentimentality and a kind of like a connection to the past, because I guess it's like, not to be too somber, but it's like I feel sort of the weight of, man, like this, like it is possible that half or more of my life has already lapsed, you know, has already taken place. And so yeah. Any opportunity to kind of like re-experience the past is a really exciting one. And then the second part, I think, is COVID. And I think it's just like that kind of like, man, we lost friends, we lost family, we experienced more sickness, more emotional, mental health problems, more financial crisis, more like all these challenges all like pummeled together, that I think we're like, you know, maybe it'd be sweet to see some old bandmates or some old friends, or, you know, just, you know, reconnecting. So that's my, you know, that's my two cents. But what do you think? Do you think the COVID thing is part of this?
Listen, I'm just grateful for anything. I mean, so I live in Los Angeles and, you know, shows are trickling back. I mean, I went to, you know, I saw, you know, a couple of bands in a bar, maybe not, you know, a little less than a month ago. And it was great. Yeah. Just like, man, there's some loud amps and a guy beating drums and right. people, you know, smiling. And so I, you know, the full kind of a schedule of dates haven't really arrived, but I, you know, I see these, whether it's a festival or a big lineup I'm looking forward to. I'm just, you know, the main thing that I think ties not only hard rock or punk or hardcore or heavy metal is, well, actually I'd say even to me, to some degree, you know, coming up in the hardcore scene, I feel like the social aspect of it actually trumped the music part of it. Like that, yeah. Was actually the key component, and when you kind of remove that for X amount of time, it, you know, you feel that so kind of viscerally, and like, yeah. you saw that kind of with the that hardcore show in the park in New York with like Madball and Wisdom,
yeah,
and Chains,
right,
where those, you know, there's a lot of kind of controversy because it was still we weren't fully out of the pandemic and there was a lot of criticism. True. But I'm like, in many ways, you know, because like John Joseph from Cro-Mags was saying some stuff, and I'm like, well, in many ways, you know, hardcore, the type of people that are into hardcore are not, it's a naturally rebellious culture. So I'm like, this is completely lines up with it, but you saw the enthusiasm, the amount of people that were there, how hard they were going off in the pit, and also it's because it's like, yo, it's not a want, it's kind of a need, right? We need to be around other people.
Yeah, no, actually, sorry, man. I'm trying to multitask, which I'm purely incapable of doing. But my son is like having a blast playing video games with his friend in the room next to me. And so I'm just, hey, man, I'm on a podcast. Please quiet it down a little bit.
Well, it's all right. I got a weed whacker guy down the street, and there's nothing I could do about that. So I'm just like, hey, weed whacker guy, you.
Right. Like, dude, don't you know I'm podcasting right now? This is serious. We alive.
They don't respect the cast.
I think we, you know, when we first announced the Furnace Fest lineup in 2021, so like I feel like now we've announced the lineup three times or something because of being postponed. But when we announced it back in March, it was March 5th. I mean, I remember like probably 20 or 30% of the comments were negative. Like, you're not thinking about other people. You guys are crazy. Of course, people in Alabama would do this. You're all Republican. You know, like there are all these things that were pretty, I guess not shocking, but just kind of like, all right, well, this is how people feel. There's still a lot of fear in the world, and rightfully so. I mean, we've been through the most intense season most of us have ever been through. But I think when to see, you know, to see the breakout kind of events like that Madball show and wherever that was. I don't know if it was Long Island or somewhere up there. And
it was Brooklyn or something.
It's just like, wow, it's so crazy. But now, you know, most recently, my friend and one of my business partners texted me a photo, and it was him at Green Day with 40,000 other people on Friday night. So it's kind of like, all right. I mean, I know you live in Texas, and you know, you guys have probably been living maskless for a while now. But it's, yeah, there's a level of normalcy, but like cushioned right up next to Delta variant, and like. Yeah. Are the vaccines, are we still good? A lot of questions, you know, a lot of fear, uncertainty and doubt still that are here present with us. So it's a wild time.
Yeah. And it's tough to have those conversations without, attaching some kind of political tribal, right. Piece of it. And unfortunately, I feel like we go too far down that rabbit hole, we might not come out.
That's true. That's a good point.
but you know, with relation to that, I do think, you know, the festival is supposed to take place September 24th to 26th, yeah. 2021. I think
it's impressive.
I'm sure you'll be fine. Concerts are happening. Festivals are happening. Yeah. Festivals of much bigger scale than this one, so I think you're gonna be all right. Just to kind of give my audience a little bit of context, just about your background. You founded a record label called Take Hold mm-hmm. Records. I mean, going back to the 90s, and then eventually they bought Tooth and Nail.
Yeah, Tooth and Nail Records bought out Take Hold, and. Yeah, which and brought me and my family from Birmingham, Alabama, up to Seattle to work with them. And it's crazy. The last year I did Furnace Fest was the first year I lived in Seattle, and I'm pretty sure they were not super happy with me because of how much time. You know, it's one thing to say like I promote a little festival. It's another to actually have people listen in on all the conversations. And back then it was. It was just a very different story. But I've been the guy that always appreciated music that had absolutely zero musical skill or ability whatsoever. Like I have no rhythm. I can't even clap for more than a few seconds before I realize I'm like cognizant of my lack of rhythm, and I'm like, oh man, this is embarrassing. But it's just been cool that I've had this opportunity to work with so many different artists and events like Furnace Fest that I never would have imagined coming back, never would have imagined being a part of my life again. And I just feel a ton of gratitude. It's really, overwhelming, really.
Well, I mean, there's this kind of cultural cross-section, specifically with regard to Tooth and Nail Records, Take Hold Records, Christian hardcore, right? Yeah. And all the kind of machinations of that, because obviously it wasn't just hardcore music, right? We're talking metal, we're talking emo, right? We're talking a really wide spectrum of music that would fall kind of under this one umbrella, and mm-hmm. being a band that was very active in the scene at the time, it's tough not to kind of take notice, because I always say, you know, I'm, you know, I could feel the same way about a Christian metal band as I do about a satanic
right,
metal band,
right.
And that I'm just like, I'm here for the riffs, like I kind of right. like I've like barely paid attention to lyrics. I'm like, if the band was good, the band was good. You know, we had the good fortune to play with bands like Zayo all the time, and they were such a groundbreaking metalcore band. You know, we got to meet the dudes from Spitfire early on, who put out a classic record of that era that was actually produced by Steve Evans at Trax East.
Right.
Living Sacrifice was kind of like this revelation, because they had the chops of any like high level kind of, you know, Swedish or even new wave American heavy metal band. They somehow, I don't think they really got the credit that mm-hmm. that they deserved, but I never really made this distinction, you know, between like I just, it was just never a thing for me of like, oh, this band is this kind of, I'm like, I just like, are they good?
Right.
You know, yeah. But anyway, just to kind of give some background and has a lot of that, kind of ethics and cross pollination between, maybe the religion and the scene culture, you know, has that always something that persisted within the ethos behind Furnace Fest originally?
Yeah, that's a great, man. I appreciate you asking. It's a great question. And it's a challenging question because we unfortunately, I feel like we're a more divided front as a country than we've ever been.
True.
And so even to, you know, to bring up religion, spirituality or politics in these days is just like it's, you know, potentially choppy waters. But that was, to me, that was always the intrigue, you know, like the excitement wasn't that I was a Christian working primarily with Christian artists who wanted to isolate himself from everybody else. To me, the intrigue and the allure was that I had so much to learn and to take in and to experience from all the whole other side of this, that especially in the South at the time that I was in the late 90s, early 2000s, that it was sort of like a, you know, there were like two sides, you know, unfortunately, probably a lot like today, there's two sides. You're the good people, you go to church, you kind of like steer clear of anybody that's a little too many tattoos, too long a hair, too crazy of a sound or too sketchy looking, whatever it is. And so to me, Furnace Fest was just an opportunity to say, well, I really love a lot of these Christian bands that I don't think are appreciated enough by the world outside of Christianity. And then on the other side, but I also really love all these other bands that I get to go see that I don't think are appreciated nearly enough by all the Christian crowd. And so Furnace Fest really, it wasn't there was never an intentionality deep enough to say, you know, let's get 40% Christian and 60% main, you know, regular people in the, or 55, you know, 45. It was just like, let, you know, whoever's available and whoever we're listening to, but it was very intentional in terms of trying to just even the playing field. And like, look, if you're a band that wants to preach very passionately from stage about your hope in Jesus, then Furnace Fest is a place for you to do that. And people may or may not listen to you, and that's okay. If you're the band that wants to open up a Bible on stage and tear pages from it and stomp on it, then Furnace Fest is a place for you. Like, people may or may not listen or agree, but it's a safe place. We're not judging each other. We're actually learning to honor our differences. And I think that it's interesting now that that maybe our country's been through what it's been through, that Furnace Fest, that ethos or that kind of the ideals behind it seem almost like, wow, that's a crazy, like that's a novel idea. But it really was just, how do we bring the two sides together and just help, you know, we're all eating the same spaghetti backstage. We're all drinking the same stage water. We're all sweaty and, you know, miserable and yet loving every second of the opportunity. And so, it was intentional, but I had no idea just how special or significant, the kind of opportunity or what flourished from it, how that would be. So,
well, yeah. So what you're saying is for 2022, you just spoiled that Sinead O'Connor is headlining.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Well, I mean, that is, you know, I mean, this is kind of a current and maybe I shouldn't talk about this, could get me in trouble, but we, Hatebreed, weren't able to play in the end, which was a bummer, but I get it. It's like, they had a great tour opportunity. And to me, it's like, I'm a fan of artists, and I'm a fan of artists doing what they believe they're supposed to do. And so I don't for a second hold it against Hatebreed or anybody for changing plans. It's life. It is what it is. So we ended up swapping Hate Breed with Motionless and White, which did not receive the sort of fanfare, you know, that we'd kind of enjoyed leading up to this time. And I think primarily because stylistically, it was like, wait, that doesn't compute. I need something that's really similar to Hatebreed in order to qualify it as a celebration. And I think Furnace Fest has always just tried to say, well, if it makes sense to even one person here, then maybe we should consider it. And, you know, I don't know. So maybe you're not that far off, you know, maybe if we do this again, it'll be the most bizarre, lineup we could ever come up with. So yeah, who knows?
Well, listen, I see a lot of parallels, you know, God Forbid played in 2002.
Mm-hmm.
And it's an experience that's really, you know, you tour, you do a lot of shows, you know, you have all these experiences, but yeah. That day is like burned in my brain. It was such, because it just felt like this real collection and meeting ground. I mean, outside of Hellfest, mm-hmm. there wasn't really any other, or maybe like the New England Hardcore Metal Fest.
Sure.
There weren't too many of those environments because, you know, everything was, this is early days of internet, kind of pre social media. So that day, it's the first day I met the guys from Avenged Sevenfold. We had tour with them booked for a few months after. So it was more like, hey, we're going on tour. How you guys doing? Let's just connecting. They played very early that on the same stage we did really early that day. Met guys from Between the Buried and Me, and they're telling me how much they love God Forbid, and like little thing, things like that stick with you because especially when it's like an upcoming band that mm-hmm. goes on to become a successful band, and you have these connections. And God Forbid had this experience where we were booked over 18 Visions and Every Time I Die, and they were like the coolest bands,
right?
And I was like, and you know, the floor was packed and it killed mm-hmm. it, and we played and like 2/3 of the people left, and we were like, man, why? I was like, man, why they? Sometimes you get upset when you get booked mm-hmm. after certain bands, but it had this kind of, you know, battleground type of field where when you're an up and coming band, you're trying to fight for your position, and you want to impress people, and you want to and Godfrey was always this band that was like, we never really totally fit in with everyone, and this that day was emblematic of that. But I just remember the heat. I remember how long it seemed. I mean I was watching the band, you know, and it was like, and you're like, damn, there's a lot of bands. You're like, man, Dillinger's still coming up, Snapcase is coming up, and then what was legendary really about that day was the Andrew WK set.
Yeah.
And I think I might have talked about this story on the podcast, but I just remember it was late. It was probably, I don't know, 10, 11. I don't even know how late it was.
Yeah, sounds about right.
It's all these hardcore kids just literally baking all day. We watched 80 million bands. And like, I felt like people were tired, right?
Mm-hmm.
But then all of a sudden, Andrew WK comes on. All of a sudden, there's like concert lights. I'm like, where'd these come from? Right? And all of a sudden, and then it seemed like it was kind of sparse, but it seemed like everyone that was in the grounds all came back. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden, it turned from hardcore show to rock and roll concert in about 10 minutes. And it was still to this day, it's the craziest show I've ever seen. And I still don't know what was going on in the water.
Right.
Were people handing out Andrew WK demo tapes? Was there someone spiking the drinks? I don't know what was going on, but it was one of the most fun nights I ever had. So the whole day is just something that sticks with me, you know.
That's man. I love hearing your recollection of that day. And to me, that's the beauty and the power of bringing all of us together, you know, is for those different memories. And to me, same, you know, Andrew WK, I had never had hardcore kids more upset with me than when we announced Andrew WK, because again, it just didn't make any sense comparatively speaking. And I don't think it was the demo tapes. I don't know. I just think it was, I feel like at first, maybe it was just sort of like, like a challenge. Maybe it's like, hey man, let's like stir something up during this, you know. But then it's, as soon as he starts, it was like, it's almost like what's the way to describe it? It's kind of like you turn to the right and you look at your neighbor and you're like, man, they're going crazy. And you turn to the left and it's like, dude, everybody, I mean, all right, like, okay, so we're all going crazy. It's like, yep. And it was like, that's who, what barricades, like what stage, what drum riser, you know? That, yeah, I don't know that I'll ever see a show that was as special and as unique and probably as unexpected as that one. That was what was so wild about it, is nobody saw it coming. And so when the reaction was what it was like, wait, what? I thought this was supposed to be like, you know, everyone pieces out now, but no, it's the opposite. But man, thank you. That's beautiful. Thank you for bringing that up.
Well, listen, there's just these certain moments that we get to experience.
Yeah.
And in the moment you realize it's special, but in hindsight, yeah, it becomes even more special because it is. It's just this little snapshot in time that certain communities and cultures cultivate all on their own. And yeah, and you know, I'm all the time, I have a lot of gratitude about my particular upbringing within this heavy music world and independent music world, because it's like, hey man, I always say I'm like the Forrest Gump of metalcore. I've been there for every time something cool happened, I was kind of in the background like, what's going on, man? And so I use this show to give my small little insights.
Sure.
Damn, I was gonna ask you something. I can't remember what the hell.
Well, I was. I mean, just to comment really quick. I think I would argue that's a gift that many of us aren't able to recognize because we're oftentimes so distracted by the noise of everything else. And so the fact that you're able to hone in on that and like, man, you know, I've actually been in some, even if it is kind of looking, peering in from back, you know, behind or from the side or whatever, I think that's a beautiful thing. And I'm really, really recognize that as a gift in you. And what a cool point of view.
Yeah, I always feel super lucky to have this just to come from the world that I've come from. So yeah. Now I remember my question. So over the weekend, there HBO released this documentary about Woodstock 99.
Yeah, I saw the trailer. I'm super excited to see it. I saw the little teaser trailer.
It's great and kind of horrifying. And
so have you seen the whole thing? Is it out now?
It shows that it's an episodic. But I believe, and it's 2 hours, so it's like a full length documentary, but I believe each episode must be on a different
thing.
But okay. So it feels very, very complete, but kind of horrifying in hindsight. Actually, like I was going to put out a tweet at some point that I'm like, I actually think low key, Woodstock 99 might be kind of like the beginning of the end of rock music, kind of being in at the forefront of pop culture, because it was like rock and metal had the stage, had the limelight, and it went up in flames literally.
Wow.
And I think it became like embarrassing for pop culture. They're like, yeah, we need, but it's funny, but all those bands, you know, the Metallicas and the Korns, Rage, and they still headline giant festivals to this day, and they don't turn into that.
But right.
there was something going on, but rock and metal, I think, became kind of the scapegoat. Mm. But just speaking, but what, you know, kind of how this relates to you, it's clear, right? There's all of these horror stories, whether it's Woodstock 99 or Firefest,
right,
that these things are pretty hard to pull off.
Yeah. Yeah, they are.
Were the original ones, were they actually profitable? Were they successful? Were they okay? Or is it because the thing always surprised me about it, even back then, I was like, man, there's so many bands. Can they afford to pay all the bands? Can they afford to feed all the bands? Was that the logistical aspect workable back
then?
No,
it was. Yeah, great question or great questions. No, the original Furnace Fest, not a single one of the four were financially profitable. I mean, up until the final one, which lost the most, they lost relatively little. And I saw them more as kind of like a marketing opportunity for artists that were on Takehold, where they, hey, this is kind of an expense. This is our big bringing everybody together, throwing a party. You get to play with a bunch of bands that you may not play with otherwise. So it always, from that angle, was always kind of easy to justify. But I'm a huge, huge fan of both of the Firefest documentaries, and I've watched those probably, I don't know, 5 or 6 times each. And every time my daughter loves watching them too. And so it's something that she and I get to do together. But every time I just am like making mental notes, you know, like how not to pull off a music festival because A, it's hard, but then when you throw in the kind of, just absolutely absurd ideas, which on one hand are like, there's the vision behind it is actually really incredible, which is why it sold out and why it you know, had the potential it had, but obviously the execution left a lot to desire. I think maybe the difference between a Woodstock 99 or a Firefest and what Furnace Fest is doing is that A, we're essentially in the city. We are 100% in the city limits. I mean, we're 3 minutes from downtown. And so we're in a historic landmark that, yes, you know, has claims to fame of being a haunted house, and people have done all kinds of crazy stuff there. But it's not like we're in some remote location where you can't, it's like, oh no, there's no water. The bathrooms are overflowing. What do I do? It's like, well, you get on your little rent a scooter and you scoot down to like the local gas station or something, you know, like, or you just go, you know, you just leave. You call your Uber, you know.
how many people are you looking that you are hoping or think will attend?
Yeah, 10,000 a day. And awesome. So the original was maybe between 1,000 and 3,000 a day, depending on the year. So the demand this year, and really the only way we're able to do that is we've added a third stage out, and what you would have remembered as the parking area is now a third stage. So it's kind of, it's like Furnace Fest meets Warp Tour, kind of vibes with a big main stage out there. And but yeah, it's going to be a bit of a different beast, but I guess it's all, the shortest answer would be for us that it's always been, how do we over deliver without hyping people too much, you know? And that's always the challenge, you know. I think keeping it down to earth and trying to remind ourselves and remind everybody else that we're all human, that they're, anything can and probably will go wrong. And when that happens, we're going to respond in a way that would be honoring to you and to everybody else. And so we'll get through it. And I think that's the level. I mean, every time we've had to move the festival because of COVID, our ticket refund rates have only been between 2% and 5%. And I think it just speaks to like the level of confidence that people have placed in the work that we're doing, it helps that the early years that people have fond memories. Of course, if this was a brand new event and we were just like, hey, we're doing this brand new thing, it probably would be but there is to be fair, there is a Facebook parody site called Fire in the Furnace Fest that was pretty hilarious and actually very, very I don't know, very humbling. Like, I actually felt like, man, this is crazy. There's a being, you know, being the fan that I am of the Firefest documentaries, I was like, dude, we have our own Facebook Fire in the Furnace Fest. That's amazing. I felt like we've arrived, you know.
Was it fire with a Y?
Yeah. Okay. Spelled right. Spelled exactly as the original, you know, Pablo Escobar Island heist Firefest.
Well, listen, I mean, one thing I have to say is seeing that growth or you know, level of interest, I think really speaks to the kind of consistent uptick in terms of that this scene has grown. You have bands like Under Oath that 20 years ago were a relatively small up and coming band that has gold records and plays arenas and does things like that. You have, you know, Killswitch who's these bands have and the scene has really become legit, right? It was underground and now this is part of the bigger subset of the mainstream rock world, which is kind of incredible.
Greetings from Evergreen Podcasts. We're rolling out a listener survey and we want to hear from you. The information in the survey will help us gather statistics and in turn make our shows more appealing to advertisers. I know most people don't like ads, but this is one of the only ways our shows make money and help keep their lights on. We promise it will only take a few minutes, but the impact on our podcasts will be tremendous. As a token of our appreciation, we'll randomly select one lucky participant each month to win an exclusive merchandise package from Evergreen Podcasts. Head to evergreenpodcast.com/listener survey to help a show and possibly get some free stuff for doing so. We can't thank you enough for the support. Now back to the show.
Ever wonder what a punch from Elton John feels like?
Or how you'd cope with having turned down the chance to be in Nirvana?
Or what signal Keith Richards gives when he wants you to get the hell out of his hotel room?
Fans of Too Much Effing Perspective don't have to wonder, because they've heard these exact stories and a jillion others on our podcast. I'm Alex Hoffman, former tour manager for Radiohead.
And I'm musician and comedy writer Alan Keller. On the TMEP show, we get guests like Nancy Wilson from Heart, Jeremiah Frates from the Lumineers, and Modern Family's Julie Bowen to tell us things they may have only shared with their therapist, clergy, or a TMZ stringer.
So join us on Too Much Effing Perspective. That's EFFING Perspective, the only podcast you crank up to 11.
This is the story of Whitney Houston.
This is the story of Kurt Cobain.
Of George Michael, of Otis Redding, of Amy Winehouse, of Michael Hutchence, Bob Marley. This is the story of Prince.
It's a new podcast series.
About how they died, why they died, and why we're still talking about them so long after.
It's like nothing you've ever heard before.
It's storytelling.
But it's more than that, because rock stars,
they tell us how we feel. They change our mood.
They change the clothes we wear, the people we hang out with,
the way we remember things.
It's them who give us those ludicrous moments, the ones where you're
jumping around, singing your heart out, feeling understood.
And it's those moments we'll help you remember, the ones you're thinking about right now.
That feeling.
That feeling.
It's coming soon from Crowd Network.
Just search for Death of a Rockstar on your podcast app
and subscribe now.
Yeah, I mean, it's a great point. I mean, the fact that we are beneficiaries as a festival of in many cases, years and years of hard work, consistent toil, touring nonstop in vans and trailers, like doing whatever it takes. But because we were there early with bands that maybe, like you expressed, the 18 Visions playing, you know, playing super early in the day. I mean, there were a lot of like the Newfound Glories playing, all kinds of bands that played early. It wasn't because we were trying to be mean. It just because not that many people were aware of the band at that time. So to see kind of like the beauty of just wanting to connect with artists at a young stage of their careers and then how hard they've worked. I would argue that the success of Furnace Fest 2021 has actually been 20 years in the making, and not so much on our part as much as all of the artists that are involved and the energy they've put forth.
Yeah. And I I've mentioned, you know, some of the festival disasters, but it bears kind of speaking about the festival's successes that essentially we also have 20 years of promoters and venues like learning actually how to do this stuff properly, right? You've had the Ozfest and the Warped Tour and Mayhem and things like that, the touring festivals. But then we've also seen this, you know, this mass growth and success of destination festivals, be it Bonnaroo or Coachella, and now into the rock sphere that, you know, a lot of the Danny Wimmer stuff. So there's so much data and background and goes, okay, this is the types of venues we need to use. This is how the budgets need to work out. This is how catering needs to go. This is how, you know, so it's not, I think, you know, yes, it's fun to watch the Firefest documentary, but those are the exception and not the rule. We've kind of figured this stuff out.
Yeah. And I think that one of the thoughts, as I hear you saying that, is that in the case of Furnace Fest, our risks were mitigated substantially because we originally built this for the original footprint, and the original kind of like 3,000 cap would just be incredible. Like if we could get anywhere close to 3,000 people a day, that would be the biggest Furnace Fest ever. And so we booked bands and our budget, everything reflected that sort of umbrella that we were under and that we were really, really thrilled to be holding. And then when COVID hit, it was like, well, in some ways I would argue for Furnace Fest that COVID was the best thing that could have happened purely from a time perspective, because all of a sudden it bought us another 9 months or 11 months of time and energy. And at that point we said, well, we've sold out the original footprint. So now maybe we should add a third stage. Maybe we should almost triple the budget, and maybe we should go after a bunch of other artists. And so it really, COVID, we didn't just take a hiatus or we weren't bears just like hibernating, like we're just going to go away. We'll come back, you know, when the temperature warms up. We really went to work. And I think that was, one of the sweet things, maybe one of the only sweet things to come out of COVID, but, I was grateful for that. And it's a very different festival as a result. If anything, the bar has been set, I think, from those early events, and now we have to prove, like, hey, with this sort of like Furnace Fest brand 2.0, this actually is even better than what you remembered it being. And that's the, in my mind, that is like, until we hit that, then we're not there. And thankfully I've got an incredible team. I've got three other business partners that all share equal risk and reward. We've got so many people that are doing so many different aspects. Whereas once upon a time, it was primarily my thing with a couple of friends helping out, but but you're right. The successes surely outweigh the failures, but the failures are a whole lot more fun to talk about and watch, and they keep us humble, you know. And I think they keep us, they remind us, like, don't get arrogant, you know, don't get cocky, and don't think that this thing couldn't go sideways if you're not really cautious and really, really wise.
There's a reason why Titanic was the biggest movie of all time.
Right.
We like knowing that the boat's going to sink.
Yeah, it's so true.
I love watching kind of anything revolving some type of con artist or these, because it reminds me, it's like a lot of people, they don't start out trying to be con artists.
No, they really don't.
But there's this kind of entrepreneurial CEO's disease of what I call it, like, just toxic positivity.
Yeah.
Where, like, so they're like, they're so focused. They're like, you know, it's like, I have my vision board and all my success is because I visualize it. And if you come and you're like, oh, hey, you know, the water is not going to be here by Tuesday. We need to, no, you're being negative. Right. You need to get your negative. And it's like, there's this fine line between optimism, pessimism, and just like reality in the middle, where it's like being positive is great and having that, but there's also a fine line between being overly positive and being delusional. So it's interesting to just watch that, because we've had so many situations where, whether it's a product launch or an event, where everything looked like it was going wrong and then it just kind of worked out. And we've seen you just can't hope for that. People actually have to go solve problems. You can't just hope it's all just gonna workout.
Yeah, exactly. And that's, yeah, tomorrow morning I'll leave to go down to I live in Nashville now, but I'll drive down to Birmingham with one of the business partners and spend a couple of days setting up meetings. But even the way that we're planning this and meet, including the city, including Sloss Furnaces as a venue. And there's so many, there's so many different components to this now, and so many different people that are able to look in and help guide us and help encourage us and give us thoughts for how, you know, it's just like, how do we deal with, this whole question of vaccinations and Alabama being the lowest vaccinated state in the country. And even though the probably, as you remember, most people that come to Furnace Fest are not actually local to Alabama. Most people are coming from all over the place. And yet it's still, you know, of course there's concerns and just wanting to know, you know, from a city, like, hey, what is there anything you guys would like to see us do that would really help set this thing up to be a success, and how can we work together? And so it's just when I think that one of the lessons that I gleaned from Firefest was that working together thing seemed to like lose traction at some point, and it was really just like one person's vision and his way or the highway, rather than the collaborative strength of teaming up. And so that's, man, I think there's strength in numbers and just having good counsel and people that know what they're doing. And so when we even thought of this, one of the people that we tracked down was Kevin Lyman from Warped Tour, and just like, hey man, please like tell us directly and tell us straight, like, are we crazy? And he was just like, no, you're not crazy, not at all, but this is going to be really, really hard. And that's pretty much everybody, you know, everyone who was from the music industry told us something similar. No, you can do it, but it's going to be really hard. And of course no one was predicting COVID at that point. So, there's a whole nother element of challenge that we were not foreseeing, but here we are, you know, are we under the two? Yeah, we're less than 2 months out, dude. It's crazy.
Almost exactly 2 months out.
Wow.
So I just had one real last question. It might go on for a while, but so we obviously have this one event, but is this something that there's a future for? Or is this just going to be, hey, we'll do it, see how it goes, and kind of reassess?
I think, yeah, man, that's so good. So good. I think it's kind of like, it comes down to how likely a God forbid reunion could happen in 2022. You know, I think
it's so funny. I think we're the only band that has to come back. When I'm looking at something like this, they went to the way, way back machine on this. They got everybody.
Yeah. So I think it comes down to there. Of course, you know, it's like I've tried, I haven't always succeeded, but I've tried to be honest and hopefully more honest with myself and others the older I get, and the less arrogance and ego is kind of like jumping out. But the truth is that yes, we're completely shocked and absolutely astounded by the reaction, both starting with artists, agents, managers, everyone on the industry side, and then translating obviously into fans and the supporters and the community and really just the whole family. I think from my perspective, I probably take the road of caution, and that is that I want to see us genuinely exceed and excel on all levels and all expectations, and then be like, okay, yes, dude, we killed it. It was incredible. It was everything that everyone thought it could be and more. Like, we're idiots if we don't do this again. Like, God forbid, what's it going to take? You know, like, let's start with you, you know?
Well, we got it first. We I have to back up the Brinks truck, and then.
Yeah, exactly. It's just, so I think, I just feel like there's so many artists though that I wish we could have included. And so to me, it's like the challenge is that Furnace Fest can't go from, or couldn't, even hypothetically speaking, go from being a heavily nostalgia-leaning fest to all of a sudden being kind of one of the festivals that you described, which is mostly current bands, which is great. And obviously there's a place for that, but that wasn't the vision for this. And so it really comes down to, well, how many artists would potentially reunite? You know, like an artist like Bane said, you know, well, we would only play if you got Sunny Day Real Estate back together for the fest. And so that's fine. You can issue, you know, God forbids, welcome to issue challenges. I mean, I'm down for a challenge.
I'm trying to think, but who can I, who, all right, unless Dillinger's coming, we ain't coming. No.
That is, I feel like that's one of those things where, man, maybe I don't have nearly as much faith as I claim to have, but I think that you don't, oftentimes you don't know what's possible because you just don't try, and you just don't, it's like, well, that would never happen. It's well, maybe, but maybe if you just reached out and said, hey, this is a crazy idea, but this is what we're thinking. What do you think? I think that this theme that we kind of started our conversation on, which is where everyone's getting older, life seems to be flying by, COVID, all the craziness we've been through, and circling back to some of our fondest memories in life are really worth chasing. So yeah, who knows? God right forbid on. And Dillinger Escape Plan with Bane and Sunny Day Real Estate, Furnace Fest 2022.
He's got to put out into the universe. Like I said, that toxic positivity, we're going to turn that around. We're going to make a vision board, and you're just going to
Now we just got to manifest it, you know?
No, we just, you hold hands, say some prayer, all right?
Right,
use the power of the Lord to make this happen, all right? That's what we need to do.
Well, that's amazing.
Well, listen, Chad, I really appreciate you taking your time to be on the show.
Dude,
I
mean, same. Thank you,
Doug. You know, this show is, like I said, it does have a big hand in kind of reexamining the past or understanding these stories of how artists, for the most part, got from A to B, but it is also about celebrating this culture, you know, and I think these festivals, that's ultimately what they are. They're celebrations.
Absolutely.
Right. And so we got Under Oath headlining one day, Taking Back Sunday, Killswitch Engage, Andrew WK is coming back. All right.
Yeah. Those, Andrew WK will be back.
Yep. For those who are asking, I can't even name all the bands. Where should people go to check out the festival? Is it sold out?
It's 3-day passes sold out as of a couple of days ago. There are still a limited number of single day tickets. But it's like, I think it's, I don't know, 85 or 90% sold out now, which for the whole thing, which is just crazy.
All right. Well, X-Men fans, get your tickets now or, you know, forever hold your peace. Is that the phrase?
That's right. Yeah, right. You're right. You nailed it.
I'm going to a wedding next week, so I got to practice that for somewhere.
Nice,
when I stop the wedding.
That's going to be fun. Have a great time,
Chad. Thank you so much. Good luck with the festival.
Thank you too,
hey,
Doc.
You never know if I'm not busy that week. Maybe I'll swing down. All right.
Yeah, dude. Please let us know. We'd love to have you.
You know, I'm not sunburned right now, and I just really want to get sunburned and
dehydrated. Yeah, I know. Hopefully, by the end of September, it won't be as bad as what you remember. But
come on,
it's Alabama, so Alabama, anything's possible.
Global warming coming together like this, baby.
That's true.
We ain't gonna, I mean, but you never, here's the thing, you never know with weather, right? You can get rain, we never know.
Maybe it'll be 65 degrees in San Diego. Who knows?
We'll see.
But we'll see.
Even with all that, I wish you all the luck in the world. And it just sounds incredible event. And I think everyone's gonna have a fantastic time. So just good luck with everything.
Agreed. I appreciate you. Thanks for what you're doing. Great to talk to you.
Likewise, Chad. Be well, sir. Bye-bye.
Yeah, me too. Bye.
You just heard Living Sacrifice, who I mentioned on the show, with their song Reborn Empowered from their album entitled Reborn. I think that album's from like 99 or 98. And they were just ahead of the curve. Tight recording, riffs, very Meshuggah influence, but just, you know, it's groovy. Definitely one of my favorite Christian bands. Like they're like up in that song. It's like, Jesus! I'm like, you got me singing along. I'm like, that's right. Jesus got riffs like that. I'll be at church on Monday or Sunday, wherever y'all go. Anyway, I hope you enjoyed the conversation with Chad. He's a very affable person. He has an excellent personality, very, very, very heartwarming individual. And I had an excellent time speaking with him, and I really appreciate him taking the time to be on the show. And, you know, if you're in Alabama in a couple weeks, like we did this interview like a month ago. So sometimes it's so funny listening to an interview when you record it and you're talking about things at a certain time. I'm like, oh, the fest will be just fine. And then that was before, you know, Delta blew up. But I'm sure they'll be fine. They're in Alabama. Ain't no rules there. Do what you want. It's outside, you know. I mean, we'll be fine. If I just saw Guns N' Roses in front of like 30,000 people. We all survived, even though I got a little bit of a cough. I don't know. Let me see. I feel like something's coming on. Hope it ain't the vid. Yeah, that Delta is a beast, man. That shit sucks. Like, we were doing pretty good. Like, it was down to like, there was one day I think it said zero COVID deaths, even though I think that was just because of just how they counted it. But there were a couple days it was like 40 COVID deaths. Now we're back up to 1,000 a day. 20% of that is like Florida alone, but still. I don't know. Hopefully we'll get out of this thing soon. And fucking Delta, you know? You know, some people, they'll do this thing. Like, man, he said, just get vaccinated. You can take the masks off. Now tell us, put the mask back on. See, they keep changing their story. No, the disease is changing, man. The Delta variant is different. It's way more infectious. And it's deadlier. It's sending more people to the hospital and kill more people, younger people. Like, that's a crazy enemy that just keeps changing up on you. It's like, you thought you had it. Mm-mm. I just went to the gym. COVID got some roids. Came back new and improved. Just, shit is crazy, man. But, you know, stay safe out there. I had a buddy who was just in the hospital for like 8 days, you know, was on oxygen. And I think he was vaccinated, I think. I gotta check. Pretty sure he was, but either way, it's no joke. I know, man. It's funny. This whole thing, it's very difficult to talk about because, you know, it's impossible to, in a sense, not have an opinion on it and not have it be politicized or tribalized to some degree because it literally affects everyone, right? You encounter it every time you go to a store and you got to put a mask on, or you encounter it if you're a parent and you're dealing with having to figure out what's up with the schools and their policies. So it's something that everyone has an opinion on, and unfortunately it's like after, you know, the kind of political environment we came out of during that time, you think it'd get better, but it's also now you have this divide between the vaccinated and unvaccinated in certain spaces where they want, you know, people to be vaccinated or have a test, and it's just creating more barriers, and it's just very unfortunate between people. And I don't know, you kind of like, you wait, you're like, you know what, we're gonna, you know, if we just wait long enough, we'll get to this point where everything's chill. And it just, it's not, we're not the air that maybe it's not going to happen. I don't know. But, you know, I think everyone's wishing or hoping for that back to normal moment. And maybe that's never going to happen again. And I don't even mean in regards to the disease. I think eventually it'll just be something that we live with, right? It'll just be like the flu, and the people who want to will get, you know, get boosters or whatever. And it'll be something we live with, you know, unfortunately. And maybe that'll, like I said, that'll be the new normal. It'll be how we kind of exist with that. But we have to figure out how to live together. I think that's the hardest thing. I think, and I don't know, maybe this is just something about getting older, or the idea that you pine for simpler times, just maybe because when you were younger, you were a simpler person. So you remember the world as being simple. Maybe it never was simple. It's hard to say because all the people pining for those times are older. So we all have that in common about remembering things a certain way. It's the, the mirage of examining the past. You know, it is a mirage. It's not really accurate. It's just your representation of it to the best of your ability. But alrighty, I don't know. I guess I'm getting a little pensive and, what's that word? It's a word for sad, but I can't remember. Not morose, somber. I don't know. I could look it up, but I'm not going to do that. It's a good word. You know, think about, you know, goth poets. But melancholy. There we go, baby. I was in a melancholy, just mood there. Which it's like bittersweet. Anyway, enough of the thesaurus game. Hope everyone does well. I didn't talk about Bad Wolves this week. There is stuff coming very, very, very soon. It's very exciting. And it's a situation where I almost don't want to even talk about the band until there's music. And I can play it. And you guys can hear it. You can know what we've been working on. I'm very confident in this record. And it feels like a long buildup to release music. And sometimes I worry, sometimes it's too long. That is the buildup too much that now, no matter what you do, people, it's never going to live up to maybe some people's expectations. I'm not really sure. But we have stuff coming soon. I don't know why we can't announce anything. People don't tell me nothing. All right. Don't nobody tell me nothing. Don't tell me nothing. Gonna take my ass to bed real soon. I'm gonna watch Dark Knight Rises. I was in the middle of that. I'm gonna finish that. To work on my Bane voice. Batman. I don't know. I can't do it. Let's strike that from the record. All right. I'm rambling. I love y'all. Thanks for supporting the show. I'll see you soon. Keep rocking. Stay safe. Mama out.
Hey, what's up? My name's Lurk, and I'm the host of Lamb Goat's Van Flip Podcast. Every week, I have in-depth conversations with bands from all over the scene, big and small. We also like to keep our finger on the pulse and showcase up-and-coming bands on the show as well. So come check out Lamb Goat's Van Flip Podcast.